Implantable technologies, new surveillance technologies. You know, we've talked about this on the program before. It's a situation that continues to fester. I have 44 states now, Nick, with 2,100 stores are beginning to include biometrics, which you can use your fingerprints on a little reader.
Right.
It's happening, and they're right. Implanting people, and they're going to. How do we stop it?
Well, that's, you know, again, a big shift. You know, already the government of Mexico and their attorney general's office have implanted a couple hundred employees and intend to cover the whole bureaucracy. You know, the idea of using this in the U.S., they're already promoting microcircuits for elders that are losing mental faculties, or children who, for parents, fear of kidnapping. You know, and, you know, military personnel and probation people, and, you know, and then it's eventually
dogs,
everyone.
Everywhere.
Well, and it's, you know, what's the biggest crime in America today? And it's identity theft. And who's the biggest losers? And you're going to see them pushing for higher and higher quality of identification. And ultimately, that's what it will boil down to. And, you know, many are pushing for it now. And, you know, in an environment of fear, you know, that's something that can happen. You know, when we first talked about implant technologies back in 2000 in Earth Rising, you know, we talked about what was going to happen, and it was resisted in those days. Nobody would tolerate the idea of implant technology. After 9/11, the issue comes back up, and now people are a lot more willing to give up personal privacy in exchange for this illusion of security. And that's one of the areas where you're going to see more and more fear generated by this issue of identity theft, one of the least prosecuted crimes in America, by the way, until people accept higher levels of biometrics. Already the U.S. passports, the new ones pretty quick here, are going to be requiring biometrics. Biometrics take many forms, and, you know, all of these things ultimately really change the way in which we operate in the world. We become highly transparent. You know, GPS built into our cars, you know. There was a big controversy over car rental agencies charging you every time you accelerated the speed limit. I mean, maybe you remember that story. It was in New England a few years ago, and they used a clause in their lease agreement that if you exceeded the speed limit, you paid a penalty. And so every time you did, the GPS signal computer debit your card. Well, when a few customers got wind of that, when they came back and found out they had zero balances left on their cards, they stopped it. But now you hear the same concept being used, but differently. Now you hear states talking about taxing by the mile, so that, you know, you're not only are you tracked where you go every place, but they use it as a taxing scheme as the excuse for doing it. And that's, I think, very invasive.
All right. Would you buy stock in the company that is making most of the implantable chips?
Well, I'll tell you what. it's one of those that's probably going to do real well. You know, from a military perspective, this came up in the publication called The Revolution of Military Affairs and Conflict Short of War, written by the U.S. Army War College back in the late 1980s. And they suggested using implantable GPS, those that locate you, you know, geographic positioning systems locate you within a meter or so, in service personnel. Because, you know, when you're in combat and if you get captured, being able to locate you with precision, you know, if I were in the military in a combat situation, you know, you might want that. But, you know, that's not an option. Those things become orders. And quite frankly, the paper didn't stop there. It suggested business travelers be implanted as well under the excuse of being a volatile world. You know, they wouldn't turn them on if there wasn't a national emergency, that kind of thing. But, you know, this is a U.S. military, U.S. Army War College, doctrine-driving institution suggesting that these technologies be broadly used. And the first big biometrics are military civilian personnel with their little smart cards. And, you know, and these things are gradually working their way in.
Well, you know, if they start forcing people, you know, people biblically think it's going to be the sign of the beast. But if they start forcing us to get these implants, what are you going to do, Nick? What if they say, for example, we're going to do away with our cash, we're going to go to a cashless society? I mean, what choice do we have?
You know, I'm not going to do it. You know, I think we should resist it. I think this is what goes under our skin is not the government's affair. And, you know, and I believe that strongly. I think the fact that government believes that it has a right to intrude on our personal privacy to the point where there is none is unacceptable in a free democratic republic. I don't think anyone in this country, or anywhere in the world for that matter, should be looked at in that way. I mean, tagged like livestock. You know, I don't think that's the way human beings are. I don't think that's who we are, and I resent the technology moving in that direction. I think that's really, you know, it's that those underlying abuses that have driven me for the last 12 years to write and talk about these issues, because, you know, technology is what's going to either free us or enslave us. You know, we have the opportunity this generation to create the most incredible possibilities with our technology, or in fact do just the opposite. And this is where we need new institutions and new ideas and new ways of looking at technologies that take us in a different direction, because the solutions exist on this planet today, and that's what we're missing, and that's what needs to change in terms of how we look at technologies. But there needs to be translation. You know, we don't need to understand any more than we can fix our car, you know, that we drive down the street every day, how to build each of these things that we talk about. But we ought to be able to talk about technology and feel comfortable doing it, because it's what makes countries and governments strong today, and that determines a whole lot of everything else. And so technology really needs to be translated and discussed openly in these kinds of forums, so we can get a little bit further ahead towards developing good policy.
Steve from Kirkland, Washington wants to know if this audio device you were talking about, can it transmit audio to a person who is hearing impaired, allowing them to hear?
You know, some earlier versions of this were pretty effective at that, and they incorporated a sine wave, which has a very sharp rise time and spike. And without getting too technical, basically what it creates today is RF interference, because of the spike is too fast and too sharp. In the time when it was originally invented, back in the late 50s, early 60s, this wasn't a problem because microcircuits weren't around and they didn't have the interference problems you have now. What has happened is the newer devices use a square wave carrier, which kind of hits flat, so it doesn't penetrate as deeply and doesn't carry as efficiently. Some hearing impaired have heard with this particular square wave version of the device, but it's mixed, you know. And there's a long history on that technology, and it's one that we also discuss in the book Controlling the Human Mind and on the video Mind Control, because it is an important technology. Its possibilities are pretty interesting, and it's one of those areas where the folks that have developed the most recent technology in this area have a very fine circuit. A guy named Robert Tiedemann in Germany designed it, and it's remarkable what it can do. It has a long way to go, I think, as a hearing impairment solution, but I think it is one of those possibilities.